This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
I tried to fancy up her name, but she wants to be known as a true Australian, Pia Entelandi.
Entelandi.
I still stuffed it up. You are an incredibly interesting person in what you do, and we're going to be getting into that very, very soon. And you are part of the Festival of Death and Dying, which we are dying to talk about as well. But we're going to start with your history. We're actually just talking a little bit earlier, your RMIT background. But going back even further than that, how did you get involved with sort of the creative industries and the fashion industry and all these things?
It's a weird one. I never thought that I was going to do a creative career, to be honest. I, at high school, was very much aiming towards becoming an occupational therapist. Right. And thought I'd go into sort of the health sciences area. But when I was in year 10, I went to an amputation ward for my work experience, and they did all these very bizarre castings for making prosthetics. And it was actually that got me into looking at materiality and materials, and I made my formal top out of this aquaplast plastic material, and that then started having me think, well, what are the applications to other parts of the body? And so it wasn't, I want to be a fashion designer. It was, I'm interested in the body and materials, and this seems like a nice way to bring them together. So, yeah, started my...
What did your parents think?
Well, it's funny, my dad's an architect. Mum's an OT. Mum was actually the one who pushed me into a creative industry. She was really for applying conceptual skills to a creative field, whereas Dad, who's in a creative field, was much more like, you need to get a job. And So it was actually both of them, to an extent, who really did support me to do what I do now, and they've been supportive the whole journey, which
but
has been
hold
fantastic.
On, hold on. You know, like, you went to a morgue, you saw that, and then all of a sudden you started making stuff. You know, like that. It's weird stuff.
Okay, it is pretty weird. Making garments for people who are dead and dressing them is I guess a little weird, but it was a bit of an evolution. I was doing garments that were about vulnerability and transience, and I went on an internship in Japan and discovered these materials that dissolve in water. And so I was very much a traditional fashion student, in that I wasn't, you know, I was making interesting kind of conceptual pieces. And then my grandfather died, and this is my dad's dad, and I dressed him for his funeral, and that was a real life-changing moment for me, really, because not only was dressing him and seeing his body after he had well and truly left the building amazing in its kind of catharsis and preparing to physically farewell a very tangible body, but as a fashion designer, I started going, oh, this suit. Why do we choose this suit? Mm-hmm. And, oh, things don't drape the way they should, and it's really difficult to get a jacket onto a dead person, and who's holding his arm, and don't let the head drop. And I went, wow, this is physically quite difficult to do. And then the sort of the textile side of me, which I, you know, now teach textile science, is going, how long are these going to take to degrade? And his shoes have a lot of tread left on them, and he's not going to be walking anywhere. Why are we dressing him in these clothes that are designed for living in? And that's kind of how it all spiraled out from there, that I went, I want to encourage people to do dressing, to dress their dead, because it's such an important moment that we often don't get involved in. But also to keep the garment as something beautiful and embedded with who they are and who they were and what they love. And so to make the garments personal, beautiful, biodegradable, but easy to put on as well.
All right, so off you went to RMIT.
Yes.
And you studied?
fashion design.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. What did you learn there? Obviously you didn't lose the interest in dressing the dead.
Well, that's where it started. So I did 4 years as an undergrad in fashion design, and I made everything from a pair of mermaid pants through to garments that were about freezing gravity, through to garments that had like a Y incision for an autopsy, and bits came out and twisted around and transformed. And then I started my PhD at RMIT as well. So I'm a RMIT lifer. And it was when I started the PhD that I was looking at ephemerality and mortality and transience, and that then rolled out into this larger practice. So when you do a PhD by practice, you get the amazing freedom to be able to kind of choose and evolve a direction that your practice will take. And I did a forensics piece of research. One of the projects within the PhD was looking at fibre decomposition within a burial scenario, and I went over to UWA for a residency at Symbiotica, and I dressed and named and buried a whole lot of pigs, and every 50 days for a year I would dig up three of those pigs to see what was happening, to look at how long does it take for a linen, a plant-based fibre, to decompose.
So that is performance art.
Well, it was documented, and there's a documentary going around which pretty much made me the most undateable person across UWA and Melbourne, because there is a classic scene of me putting a cotton bud up a pig's bum. It wasn't performed. I didn't see myself as a performer, although I did have a long background in performing arts. Which I'd never kind of made that connection until now. But I am doing a performance piece at the festival, and the dressing itself, when you are dressing someone there, it's not that you are performing or acting, but you definitely have to hold a space, and you have to, I guess, curate a space. You're thinking about scent, you're thinking about sounds in the room, you're thinking about lighting. So in a way, I guess it is a performance, but it's certainly not how I generally would identify my practice now. But that's an interesting take on it.
You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine. This woman has got so much more to talk about.
Thanks for tuning in to Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9. We're talking to Pia Interlant. Oh my gosh.
Interlandi.
On Sunday Arts Magazine.
Is it Italian?
It is. My dad's Italian.
Right. Yep. An Italian architect.
An Italian architect.
Wow.
It's a beautiful name. And we are talking about your beautiful practice that you do. But we didn't get to finish your full story up until now. So what sort of came after your PhD and the pigs and all of that?
Well, at the end of it, I came up with a prototype for a ritualistic garment that I could dress someone in, and had multiple components and ties and veils and sort of layering. And from there, I started working with clients and designing their burial garments, or cremation garments, their funeral garment, if you will. And so it's become a practice where I am working directly with people and their families, and then taking their families through the dressing process. But there's quite a lot involved in that. So I actually went over to the UK for 2 years to work at a natural burial ground, where I learned all about these holistic death practices and environmental aspects of the funeral industry. And I came back when my nonna died. It's funny. It's ironic that all of my grandparents died when I was doing the PhD. And the gift that I learned from each individual person was amazing and did help with every element of the practice. But when I flew back from the UK, it became really apparent that the laws in Australia are quite different. And there are a lot of people working in this space, and a lot of people calling cemeteries, and a lot of people calling funeral directors and saying, can I do this? Can I do that? And getting quite a lot of pullback from them, saying, well, no, you can't, that's not legal. And then going, well, no, I've read the cemetery, regulations, and it doesn't say that. And I then brought together a whole lot of those people and started a not-for-profit called the Natural Death Advocacy Network. And we do a whole lot of different work with communities to empower them to know what their choices are, essentially. So the practice is you know, what I do as a practitioner can be quite varied, from a very arts-based practice through to talking with law reform commissions.
Now, you're a lecturer at RMIT.
Yes.
What do you teach?
I teach material studies. So I teach the biology of linen and cotton and wool and silk and morphological and molecular structures, and the students get me day dot in their first year, and they walk in and I start talking about amorphous versus crystalline structures and they go, oh, I came to make frocks. No, I'd learn science. I stopped science. But it's understanding the materials that you work with and what happens and what properties are afforded through that is the driving force of everything I do. Like the reason that you choose cotton, or the reason that you choose a blue, or the reason that you put a seam in at that point, right? So, yeah, but I get to teach some fun studios as well.
But have you been able to bring in, you know, the things that you've learnt in terms of, you know, I guess in my mind, a lot of fabrics are chosen for their sturdiness and their longevity. Have you sort of been able to change that perspective on that?
So one of the things that I teach in second year is about care labelling. And it's not just, I mean, as a designer, you kind of imagine bringing this piece from your mind into a physicality and then passing it to a consumer. And that shouldn't actually be where a responsibility of a designer ends. Mm-hmm. You brought life to this garment and you should be concerned with its disposal and its death. So when we choose materials, it has to be for a reason. So cotton, you can compost. Wool, you can compost. All your natural fibres, compost them. Put on your care label at the end. Hey, when you're done with this, feed it back to your worm farm. But with polyester and acrylic and nylon.
Oh, my whole wardrobe's polyester.
They're estimating about 1,000 to 10,000 years with some of those objects.
Wow.
Those pieces. So it's not that they're bad, it's that they need to be used for the right thing, and recycling and sort of sustainable practice is something that we talk about a lot, and we teach a lot about the ethics of why you're choosing things to be worn on a body.
Yeah. Now, still on your career, and this is just fascinating, you're doing something in New York.
Yes.
What?
It's just a little commission for the Museum of Modern Art in New York. At the start of the year, I was contacted by their curator of MoMA to ask if I would be interested in making a piece for an exhibition that they've got coming up called Items, Is Fashion Modern? And it's questioning the place of fashion and the place of iconic fashion garments. And I was asked if I would make a response piece to one of those iconic garments.
And it is probably, if not the most iconic, one of the most iconic pieces of the 20th century, if not ever. The little
black dress. The
Chanel's.
Old classic LBD, yes. So I was imagining maybe it would be a Victorian morning gown, or it would be a christening gown or a wedding gown or something like that. But no, they turned around and had a chuckle and said, no, we want you to make a little black death dress. And I spent a while going, okay, how do I do this? I don't usually design in black. The garments are pretty simple. And we ended up coming up with a dress. Well, it's a shroud. It is a burial garment, but it's a wool crepe, which goes back to Victorian, you know, practices around. You had to be matte. It had to be black. It couldn't be lustrous because reflecting light was sort of about vanity, and you weren't allowed to have vanity in death. But so we ended up getting a white piece of wool crepe and screen printing it with a black thermochromic ink. Now, it sounds a bit technical, but the whole premise is that when you touch the ink and when you touch the fabric, the heat from your hand actually changes the colour of the garment.
Oh, really?
Yes, to white. But we've got embroidery that actually goes, it's like a mood ring ink, so it goes through a full colour spectrum. So the whole thing changes. And it's going to be really, I'm a bit nervous to see it over there and how they've gone about a heat change, because I did make an undergarment that had a lot of wiring. I used a lot of electric blankets, and then we found out, well, we couldn't send it because it wouldn't make it through customs without being picked up as something quite peculiar. So, but the whole practice is about touch. It's not really about the frock or the garment. It's the invitation for someone who's dying to come and make this thing with me.
And have they received it?
Yes, they have. Well, and they did it. They received it on Friday.
Oh, okay. So have you heard back?
I've been in consultation with them through the whole process. So it's they've been receiving fabric samples, and they've got their AV team over there who've been doing testing and things like that. So we'll
So you haven't had their response yet to it?
Not to opening the package. That'll be this week.
Right. And will it be in the exhibition, will it be that you can touch
it? So that was the aim. That was what we were thinking. People would touch it and it would change to white. And then when you take the hands away, the heat reduces, it goes back to black. So that's me thinking normal size exhibition. But they said, look, we have about 500,000 people coming through this thing. It's on for a couple of months. They can't touch it. So they're actually using projection. So they're projecting hands onto it, and the light from the projection is actually going to be what triggers the heat change.
Fantastic.
But I was really lucky to work with an amazing team to produce a documentary that goes with it, that they will be playing alongside it, because it's not just the dress, it's the dressing.
Yeah. And have you made the doco?
We have.
Right. And you made that here?
I did, in my bedroom.
Oh.
I had my teacher who taught me material studies. She has been my model, my dead live model for a number of projects. I had my beautiful interns and colleagues as being not only helping with making the garment, but with being the people to dress my model. One of my students is now a fashion filmmaker. She did the course and had a real strength in film. And so Good John has become...
wonderful,
amazing
for
filmmaker.
And is this, you know, kind of a two-pronged thing of, you know, showing people what you're doing, but then I guess the reason behind what you're doing as well?
Well, that's, I didn't want people to walk past the garment and think, oh, that's a really strange big piece of fabric, which drapes over. I want them to see that it is an invitation into talking about, well, what are you going to wear and who is going to dress you and what are you going to leave behind?
Unbelievable. Can't wait to see it. Are you allowed to put it up on your the film? Are you allowed to put it up on your website eventually?
Soon, yeah. As soon as the exhibition opens in October, I will be allowed to release things.
Right, okay.
But everything's under wraps until then.
Of course it would be. And you're going over the opening?
So there are two opens. There's a designer opening and then the public opening. So I'm sort of like... it's going to be really... I get quite nervous with those things.
Oh, but congratulations on and achieving so much. Now, another reason why you're into that...
the main reason.
Believe it or not, there is a reason. Festival of Death and Dying. What's this?
So the Festival of Death and Dying is a festival that's come from Peter Bankey and Victoria Spence, who are both Sydney-based practitioners. And last year they ran a festival in Sydney where they brought together a lot of artists and practitioners to do a very immersive weekend experience around death, about physical experiences, memory, practical skills about what you can do, and as it's something that applies to everyone, the statistics still say that 10 out of 10 people will die.
Is it that high?
Whoa. Oh, I know. We haven't cured it yet or something. But so bringing it to Melbourne is sort of a next step in trying to get people to talk about this topic we don't want to talk about, but going beyond talking about it. Because for the last few years, Dying to Know Day has been an annual chance to talk about death, and we're now seeing a real shift away from just talking into doing. And so this festival is really an opportunity for people to immerse themselves into maybe their own expectations of their mortality, but also for those around them, and both practical and artistic ways of doing so.
And how are you involved specifically?
So I'll be running a workshop And generally what we have people do is come in and write letters and look at fabric, and I demonstrate dressing and talk about each element in the dressing. But then I'm involved in the performance evening. So we actually then stitch all the letters that people have written. They're on dissolvable fabrics. We put them onto a shroud, and then on the Sunday during the day, people can come and dissolve their letters, so it sort of transfers into the garment.
Gosh. Wow. And where is it?
It's at the Dance House in North Carlton.
Right, okay. And it's on the 9th and 10th, this weekend coming.
Yes. So all rolls out, all starts Saturday morning and goes through until Sunday afternoon. And there's a performance night and also a feast at the end of
a feast.
A feast.
And Pia Interlandi.
So how do you spell your surname?
It's Interlandi. It's like Interland or Interland. We're thinking of rebranding Garments for the Grave as the Interland. Designs for a space between this and the next.
And you have a website and social media
pages.
We've
got a new website coming, because for a long time we haven't had an online store, but we're sort of thinking about taking it to the next level now.
Brilliant. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for being so interesting. and also congratulations on what's happening in New York. A great opportunity
thank
for you.
Yep. It sounds well deserved at the same time. Yep. So thank you so much,
thank
Pia.
You.
We'll have to have you in again very soon.
And of course, Festival of Death and Dying is at Dance House in Carlton, North Carlton, 9th and 10th of September. I'm sure just look it up and you'll find all the details.
You're on Sunday Arts Magazine, Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.